Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Track Podcast. I'm Liv Ekpone, joined with Ashley Titians. Woo, this has been a wild, wild weekend.
Yeah, I feel like we have a lot to talk about on the show today.
I know. So let's go ahead and dive right into it. We have a very special guest who coordinates the elite races at the New York City Marathon. We're going to recap the wild events from the Nutty Comb meet and also pre-Nats. And since World Athletics also released their nominees for the World Athlete of the Year, Ashley and I, we're going to kind of submit our votes as well. But before we dive into everything, we have to thank our wonderful sponsors, Wonderful Pistachios. I must say, Ashley and I, we have some interns here at the office, and I don't think they've tried pistachios before.
No.
So they tried Wonderful Pistachios, and we completely have demolished, what was that, seasoned salt.
Those were way too good.
Oh, my gosh. And then the salt and pepper one, that bag is...
Did we finish that bag this
morning?
No,
that bag is still up there.
We're almost done.
We're almost done. So those have been our top two flavors. But if you guys are looking for a delicious and nutritious snack that packs a real protein punch, you got to crack into some good source of protein with a tasty, healthy, Wonderful Pistachios. Each 1 ounce serving of Wonderful Pistachios contains 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. It's one of the highest protein nuts out there on the market, but that is not all. Pistachios are also known for their fiber, their better for you unsaturated fats, which may help you keep feeling fuller longer. But that's not the best part. Wonderful Pistachios come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family, your friends, as you're going in between meetings. If you're with us here with the interns, you're just snacking away here. So whether you're looking to fuel up right before you go out there, make sure you grab a big bag of Wonderful Pistachios, and that will be your now go-to snack. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day. So thank you so much, Wonderful Pistachios. But Ashley, as we mentioned, we have a very, very special guest joining us. And who do we have joining us?
Yes, let us introduce our guest for the show today. We have Sam Grotewald joining us. He is the longtime guy behind all the magic for the New York City Marathon, the Fifth Avenue Mile, as he is the New York Road Runners General Manager of Professional Athletes, and he's the one that coordinates all those elite race fields that you see on TV. And so Olivia and I are super excited to have Sam join us on the show. So thank you again and welcome.
Thank you. All of a sudden, I have a hankering for pistachios.
That's awesome. So make sure you grab some.
Funny story. I was one of the very first people on Flow Track. This is early 2007, and it was the USA Cross Country Championships in Boulder, and they asked me to give my predictions for the race. And my predictions were so impossibly wrong that it has been almost 17 years since I've been invited back onto your platform. So today feels really good. It feels like I'm out of the doghouse.
Oh, yay! Well, we're so happy to have you joining us. So that's awesome.
Some redemption for your very wrong picks many years
ago. That's right. try not to mess it up this time.
Well, you know, just first off, for, you know, our viewers listening, like, I would love to, if you could maybe dive in a little bit about some of your running background. I know you ran, I believe, at Simpson College, and so maybe talk a little bit about that and how that maybe, you know, put that on your you know, where you are currently with your career.
Yeah, thanks. So I became a runner, you know, in high school, and I wasn't very good, but I loved it. And I was given the opportunity to run it at Simpson College in Indianola, Iowa, as you mentioned. I sort of talked my way onto the team. And my coach in college, Keith Ellingson, I mean, he really was the guy who kind of instilled this love of running and this interest in professional sport in me. So I never, look, you can't really major in elite athlete recruiting or anything like that. So, you know, I never intended on working in the running industry, but summer after my junior year of college, I worked as an intern at the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and I got to know New York Roadrunners a little bit that way. I ran a couple of Roadrunners races. I left the keys to the Museum of Modern Art in the bathrooms at the New York Roadrunner offices. And that's how I got to know Roadrunners. And so then when I graduated and was kicking around looking for a job, they had a web editor position open, and that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be in web development. So it was this opportunity to kind of marry my interest in running and my love for running with this thing that I thought was going to be my career. And that was almost 23 years ago. So it has become something very different since then. But yeah, that's how I got my started Roadrunners.
That's so interesting. So how did you get started as like the athlete coordinator? I know you just kind of touched on like you wanted to be a web editor. You kind of moved into that back in 2000. You kind of climbed the ladder. But when did that kind of spark to just kind of get started as like the elite athlete coordinator kind of just sparked within you a little bit?
One of the things that we did really well, I think, on the website at the time I was working on it at Roadrunners is we started covering pro sport. Both the pro athletes in New York Roadrunner events and then, you know, pro sport sort of globally. And I became known throughout the organization as somebody, I think, who knew my stuff in that regard. I knew the personalities because I was a competitive runner. I kind of knew, I understood the athlete mindset. And so we had a guy, David Monty, who was working on the pro athlete needs for New York Roadrunners at that time. But it was only two races. It was the Mini 10K, the world's original women-only road race, and then it was the New York City Marathon. But in 2004, 2005, all these things are happening both inside and outside the organization. So in 2004, Meb Keflezighi and Dina Castor both win medals in Athens, right? Meb had been on the podium in New York in 04 and 05. Dina won Chicago, I think, in 05 and London in 06. So outside of the organization, U.S. athletes had gone from this really low moment at the Sydney Games to winning Olympic medals and, you know, establishing themselves on the podium in major big city marathons, perhaps even winning. And then internally at New York Roadrunners, we were talking about bringing back the pro athlete fields at the Fifth Avenue Mile, which had kind of gone away in the late 90s, early 2000s. We were talking with this sponsor about creating a new race that eventually became the Healthy Kidney 10K, which was a big pro race we had for a number of years. And we were in talks with the city about this massive half marathon on city streets that would ultimately become the United Airlines NYC half. And we knew that would have a pro athlete component. So it just became too much for David Monty to handle by himself. There were more events and more things to be done at each event. So because I had this interest in this knowledge base in pro sport through my work on the website, I seemed like, I guess, a natural fit to slide over and support what he was doing. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, that was 18 years ago now. So the job looked very different then than it does now, but I've been able to sort of build this thing and assemble a little team, and that's how we've gotten to this point now in 2023.
Awesome. Yeah, so, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you've been doing this now for 18 years, and it's, you know, the process for building these fields looks, you know, very, you know, some ways similar but also different from, you know, now to what it used to be. Maybe talk a little bit, you know, just exactly like what is that recruiting process like for putting together, you know, an elite, you know, for example, the New York City Marathon, like what does it take to put together a huge elite field like that for the marathon?
One of the really cool things I think about this sport is that athletes get to have different goals every year, right? So an athlete for whom New York City may be a really great and compelling idea one year, may not work for them the next. So that's something that always keeps it a little bit varied and fresh, is that we get to pursue new ideas every single year. So I really like that. Typically the process begins, in the early springtime, around the time of the United Airlines NYC half, is when I start talking to athletes about what their goals for the year are. And I start thinking about, okay, how can New York Roadrunners help support those goals, or help them achieve those goals? And then coming out of the New York City half, and we really get rocking on the marathon, in that springtime. And by the time we get out of London and Boston in April, it's pedal to the metal on the marathon and recruiting those fields. And then that's all done, in the summer sometime, mid to late summer. And we typically announce the fields for the marathon in August. This year it was at the end of August, coming out of the Budapest World Champs. And then that group is done, and then we turn our attention to figuring out all their details for race week and race weekend. So we tend to look at these race at the marathon kind of year over year. I think it's a combination of what ideas do I think are cool, and what sort of athletes do I think I want to see in the race, and then finding out along the way that there's athletes who really want to run New York, and maybe they're a good fit for these stories we're trying to tell, or maybe they're it's something we want to help support. So there are these ideas that come up along the way that we try and pursue too. So it's just everything, it kind of comes from everywhere, this group that we end up with on the starting line on the first Sunday of November.
It almost sounds like a very quick process. Like we're talking, spring, and then as you mentioned, the field is released in August, right after Budapest. Is there a certain number of athletes that you kind of strive for to fill in that race? Or is it just kind of like you're looking for, I guess, quality over quantity, I guess you can say?
We don't have any certain number that we need to hit. And you look at our women's race this year, it's probably the smallest that it's ever been, mm-hmm. but it's super, super top heavy.
Right,
so
right.
There's no quota that I'm trying to fill. For every race that we do, there's a number I have in my head where I say, okay, anything bigger than this, I don't know if it's tenable for me and my team, right? And so we end up, at all of our events, we end up turning away way more people than we could ever possibly take, just because yeah. I'm cognizant of the fact that every athlete that we put in the race takes a little bit of the service and attention away I can give to everybody else. So
right.
There is a tipping point, I think, where you want the races to look good on television, you want to have compelling stories, and you want people to be excited and go out on the street to watch or watch on ESPN2 or whatever. But also, you can't be too big, because then it just becomes too much of a strain. And that's where mistakes happen, and that's where people don't get the service that they've come to expect from our events. So
right.
there's no quota, but I am cognizant of being too big, and everybody that gets added just contributes to all of that.
From your perspective, what do you think are perhaps some of the more challenging aspects of putting together, for example, the NYC marathon field?
As I mentioned a minute ago, I turn away way more people than we take. So, my job is saying no a lot, and that's hard. I don't like that. I like being the guy that says yes, but sometimes it doesn't make sense, or it's not a fit for what we're trying to do, or we've got too many people, or whatever. So, that's something that I have to say no a lot, and I don't ever like it. I don't ever relish it. And, I hope that I can say no in a nice enough way that, athletes understand that it's nothing personal. It's just business, let's say. So that's one of the things about the gig that I think is my least favorite is having to say no to people as often as I have to do it.
Yeah. And as we know, like the New York City Marathon is a really prestigious race that we all love to enjoy. And it comes towards the end of the season, technically. Like it's the fall, it's after Berlin, it's after Chicago. Do you almost feel like there's like a three-way competition between races for athletes? And how do you kind of just go about approaching that?
Well, I would say that there's enough there's enough athletes to go around, right? There's there's enough athletes for all three races. And I think it depends to some extent on what an athlete's goals are. An athlete who's gravitating towards Berlin or Chicago, their goals are probably really different than an athlete who's gravitating towards New York. But yeah, there is some competition, I would say, between those three races, but not just those three races. Valencia in early December is becoming a real player now in terms of pro athletes who have a certain goal. So, you know, I don't think it's any secret that most of the world thought Eliud Kipchoge was coming to New York this year, but that ended up not aligning with what his plans and his goals were. And he went to Berlin and he was very, very successful there. So, there is, I would say, a little bit of competition, but also it's, you know, I want Berlin to be successful and have great athlete fields, and I want Chicago to be successful and have great athlete fields. And I was in Chicago a couple weeks ago, and it was a great race, and I'm super happy for that team. So I'm also really, really pleased about the group that we have coming to New York, and, you know, the narrative of our race, and I'm excited about what I think the race is, how the race is going to play out on November 5th.
You know, another thing too, you know, even when you do, you know, you put together these elite fields, you announce them in August, you know, there's always that chance that, you know, a few athletes have to, you know, pull out of the race for injury or other various reasons, which I know we've seen a little bit of, you know, this year, you know, with every, you know, major marathon, usually that, you know, that comes with it. And so, you know, how is that another thing that you have to manage from your perspective, and how do you, you know, manage that when that happens?
Yeah, I mean, look, one of the ways I have to look at this is that failure is an inherent part of the marathon, right? Athletes fail to get to the start line because they get injured or sick or whatever. And then athletes fail in the race, fail to finish, fail to meet, you know, performance benchmarks that we've established. So we count on that failure. It's inevitable. So we actually over-recruit a little bit, knowing that we'll drift down to a size of the group, and, you know, in terms of budget and all that, we'll drift down to where we need to be. Now, this year, you know, there's no denying it. We lost three of the best men in the race, and that was a really rough 6 days. You can expect to maybe lose one of those guys in the course of a typical year. To lose three of them, you know, that impacted the race, but it gave us the opportunity to add Tamarat Tola, who's a, you know, two-time world championships medalist and Olympic medalist, because he failed in another competition that he was supposed to do. You know, he dropped out of the world championships, and had he finished there, he probably wouldn't have been available for New York. So, you know, failure is part of it, and we account for that. But it's still, especially when it's more than one person, like it was this year, it's worse than, you know, it's more than we expected. And so that's, you know, just something you have to take in stride and deal with.
Mm-hmm. As we count down the days to November 5th in New York City, what can the fans and the followers expect from this year's field?
Well, the thing I like about New York every year, but especially this year, is that I don't know who's going to win. I don't know what's going to happen, right? You look at the women's race, and there's, I would say, seven athletes with a legitimate shot of winning the race. And I don't know who it's going to be, and I don't know how it's going to play out. And we may not know who's going to win that race until the final 400 meters, right?
Yeah.
Given how New York often plays out. Mm-hmm. Men's race, same thing. Probably five, six, seven guys who might win that race. So that's what I think is really cool and compelling about New York, is that you don't know how it's going to play out. It's not set up for one person to try and break a record or something like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's a race, and we don't know who's going to win this race typically until very, very late stages. So that's always what, you know, I think resonates best with our fans and spectators out on the course. What resonates best with our television viewing audience is they want to see a race and head-to-head competition, and I think that's something that we do really well in New York. And, you know, a couple of weeks from now on race day, I don't know what's going to happen, but I can't wait to find out.
That's right. I know we're excited too to figure out what happens on that day. You know, you've been in this for so long. You've been around the marathon for so long. What is your favorite, like, New York City marathon memory or of sorts, or, you know, something you can point back to that you remember really well, you know, very fondly?
So I started at Roadrunners in December of 2000, And that was 2 months after the Sydney Olympic Games. And you're probably too young to remember, but at the Sydney Olympic Games, we sent, the United States sent one man and one woman into the marathon there because of the qualifying rules in place at the time. And I would say that that period of the late 90s that kind of led up to that was probably the low moment of US marathoning. So in 2000, there were a bunch of groups. Keith and Kevin Hansen were one. What was then known at the time as Team Running USA was another. New York Roadrunners was a third, who kind of looked at all that and said, okay, this can't happen again. And so all those groups worked together, but also separately to ensure that, you know, first of all, encourage kids to stay in the sport even after graduating college, and gather these critical masses of athletes all training together in, you know, towards a common goal. And that really hadn't been done until the early 2000s. And so, you know, Meb and Dina winning medals in 2004 in Athens was this sort of validating moment that all this work that these groups had done was paying off. So then when Meb won New York City in 2009, he'd finished on the podium a few times, but when he finally won in 2009, that was a really validating moment and kind of this culminating thing, because it was something that we've been working on for a decade, right? And Dina, of course, won Chicago and London a little bit earlier than that, but since we're talking about New York City marathon memories, you know, Meb's win in 2009 was particularly special because it was this culmination of something that a lot of people had been working towards for the better part of a decade.
I love that. Well, Sam, before we let you go, we have one final question. I feel like Ashley and I always ask this question to our guests, but I'm going to make it
in a variety of forms.
So when it comes to just watching the sport, do you prefer watching track, cross country, half marathon, marathon,
road running?
What do you prefer to watch and why?
I think that, you know, I love it all. And I'll go to I have a high school down the street. I'll go and just stand outside the fence and watch track practice like a creep, because I love, you know, I love it all. Track, because you're in this, on this 400 meter oval and in this enclosed stadium, that's kind of made for TV, right? I mean, there's a lot of opportunity, I think, with televised track meets. You can get a track meet, you can have an awesome track meet. We saw the Diamond League final in 2 hours of television. When done right, marathon broadcasts are super compelling and interesting, but that takes a huge investment in cameras and producers who know what they're doing to send cameras back to chase packs and things like that. So it's trickier and more expensive to pull off, but when it's done well, that's really fun and compelling and cool too. And I think in New York, you know, our team, our broadcast team does a really great job and kind of understands how to build a compelling narrative as the race is unfolding. So I'm really proud to be a part of that, a place where I think marathon broadcasting has done really, really well. So I haven't answered your question specifically, but I think, you know, when it's done well, marathoning is really cool, but track is this venue and this compressed timeline that I think really lends itself well to compelling TV.
Incredible. Well, Sam, thank you so much for your time today. And Ashley and I, like I said, we'll be in New York City. So we'll see you when we land, and we're wishing you all the best as the weeks kind of unfold a little bit more. Thank you, Sam.
I'll look for you in town in a few weeks. Thanks so much.
Yes,
thanks, Sam. All right, you guys, what an awesome interview with Sam. We're going to kind of dive into what took place over the weekend, because there's just so much to unpack. So
yeah,
Let's start off with Nutty Comb. And I think we need to highlight, I think, the race that really had all the eyeballs on it. And
yeah,
it featured Parker Valvey versus Caitlin Toohey. Pretty much, we've seen it last year at NCAAs, these two young, talented ladies going after it. This time it had a different outcome. But Ashley, from your perspective, like, what, how did you see this race unfolding? And are we surprised by how Parker Valvey of Florida just attacked this course?
Yeah, so let's break this down here. Obviously, this, you know, Parker Valvey and Caitlin Toohey making their season debuts here at Nutty Comb. So much hype around this, you know, because they've been, you know, the two top ladies for quite some time, you know, dueling in and out. You know, we remember what happened last year at NCAAs in Stillwater.
Yeah.
So we come to Nutty Comb, right? And, you know, you're curious what, you know, how's it going to unfold. Parker used the same approach that she took last year at NCAAs in Stillwater, but this time, Olivia, it worked. It yeah. worked on the day. You know, she, like we saw last year at NCAAs, she, Valby's one who's going to take it out hard and put pressure on the rest of the field to say, hey, if you want to beat me, you're going to have to come catch me. And, you know, if you look at what happened in this race, about 2 or so miles in, I believe right before the 4K mark, Valby started dropping Tui. You know, Tui really tried to go with her when Valby went, you know, really hard early on, but she just, you know, in the rain and the wind, it was Valby that held on strong, and then she would go on to clock a Nuddycombe course record there, which, you know, especially in that kind of weather, was pretty crazy. So I think it was very interesting to watch all that unfold. What are yeah. your thoughts?
Are we surprised by it, though? Like, Parker literally, I felt like, ran the same race strategy that she did in Stillwater. Does it come to a surprise that the outcome may have been different?
Not necessarily, because, you know, even though Valby got second in that race at NCAA, she still ran a phenomenal race. Tui just had, like, this whole other gear, you know? Like, she had that grit, like, I'm going to catch her and no one's going to deny me. Like, that's, you know, I don't think that necessarily her winning here now with that same tactic comes as a surprise. And, you know, these two athletes still ran phenomenally, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
So, no, it really doesn't come as much of a surprise.
I think it was just incredible just kind of watching it back. Like, Valby never took her foot off the gas.
No.
Like, there was not one part where it was like her tempo, her cadence, her rhythm changed.
Yeah.
Despite all the hills that she was having to endure and climb and come down, she remained consistent. And I was super impressed by how Parker was able to execute that race. And as you mentioned, Caitlin Tui, I think we were very like excited for this because we're like, when is Caitlin Tui opening up? And it just so happened to be her versus Valby one more time. And I felt like Caitlin ran well.
She
did a phenomenal job, and I kind of expected Caitlin to be up there with Valby, and there was another athlete from Stanford, I believe, that was in the mix as well, very beginning. I think it gave us a glimpse of what Parker is capable of doing as we move, yep. like we have literally 1 month, I think, from
until
last
NCAAs.
Week. Until NCAA. So Parker pretty much just gave you it on a
here's
plate.
Here's the playbook.
Here's the playbook.
Right?
And here's what I'm doing. I'm going all gas, no brakes.
Yeah.
And
I
catch
think
me if you can.
Now that's, you know, not just Tui, but like a lot of those other top contenders. Like I'm thinking like, you know, Elise Stearns from NIU, like a lot of those other ladies that were, you know, kind of in that chase pack back there that are going to be contenders at NCAAs in a month. Like I think you got to go back and look at this race and be like, all right, if Valby does the same thing, which you can probably expect she probably will do, at Panorama Farms in Charlottesville at NCAAs, how are they going to respond? You know, is it going to be the same as last year where she goes out and then Tui is the one that challenges her and everyone else just moves up a little bit, you know, the chase pack along as well? Or do they not let Valby be alone at the front and decide to go out hard with her, knowing that, you know, it can become interesting at the end?
I don't know how to take Valby down right now. Like, one of my questions is there anyone that can do this? One. But two, how do you approach running NCAAs now? Like, I feel Valby just looked amazing and strong, which is scary to think, in the effort that she put into it, running a 9:17, and she took 2 seconds off the meet record held by Allie Ostrander, who's a phenomenal athlete at Boise State back in 2015 when she ran 19:19. I don't know how to take down Parker Valby. I think the only way to do it is you have to play her game.
You have like, to go out with her.
And, you have to go out with her and pray that your legs can sustain.
That's the thing.
The
That's
speed,
the
pressure, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then
you got to beat her at her own game. That's
you
what
have
to do.
Yes.
Yeah. I agree. So
you can't hang tight because she's gone. Parker's going to be gone.
No. I think this really sets up like just so much anticipation for what's going to come at NCAAs, at regionals. It's going to be interesting.
Yes. Mm-hmm. To kind of wrap up the top three in the field, you had Tui coming in at 19:29, Kelsey Chimmel, her teammate, 19:52, and then it was just kind of the rest of the pack on the ladies' side. But let's kind of shift gears, and let's talk about the men's side now. Harvard's Graham Blanks stole the show. That's all I have for this. He is did. Like, he did his thing. So what are your takeaways from Graham's race?
Yeah, so Graham Blanks of Harvard, he comes away with the win here. Again, rainy, really tough conditions, but he grits it out for the win. You know, looking at what he did last year at Nuddycombe.
Yes.
Blanks was 26 overall, 23:31 for 8K. Now this year he finishes first, running 23:23 in much worse conditions. Mm. And so that's pretty impressive to me. You know, Blanks is one where we all expected him, I think, to be one of those top guys in the NCAA field who's going to contend for a national title. And he's undefeated on the year. I believe he won a battle at Beantown to start off the season earlier. And so now he has Nuddycombe, a premier win underneath his belt. I think this is, you know, obviously a huge statement for him, taking down people like Nico Young, Drew Bosley, Parker Wolf, you know, all those guys that he's going to be up at the front with at NCAAs. And so very impressed here with his performance.
And then I know you just mentioned Nico Young, like he debuted similar to how Caitlin Tui was, finishing second there, 23:26. But alongside that, Blanks took down the defending champion, Kai Robinson, who finished fourth with a 23:26. I was just very impressed by how Blanks, this top group here and how they ran. It was kind of like a nice little pack that they had going on. Yep, they just executed it very well. And as you mentioned, like Blanks ran under worse conditions this weekend than the previous year.
Faster.
And he still ran faster. Mm-hmm. So does this put Blanks in another tier in regards to when we move into regionals?
Oh, absolutely.
And,
I mean, like,
you know,
when you're taking down the kind of caliber of athlete that he is, that, you know, I think that obviously puts you in that top sphere.
I'm going to drop this little plug for you. If
a
you
plug.
Guys don't know Ashley Titchens, she's a huge, huge North Carolina fan.
Yes, I am.
Well, let's talk about your guy.
The state, because I'm from North Carolina. So.
Let's talk about your guy, Rocky Hansen.
I think that's another big storyline from the weekend. I mean, what has this guy been doing? Like, what did he finish at UVA Invitational? Finished top 10. I believe he finished 7th, I believe, at UVA to open up his season.
I believe so, yeah.
And then here at Nuddycombe, he finishes 6th overall, 23:27. I mean, he beat Drew Bosley. I mean, he beat a lot of guys. Like, that's just, for a true freshman, you know, first year, not a red shirt, I think that's very impressive. And again, he was only, I believe, 4 seconds back from the winner, from Blanks, because, you know, the top 14, they're all the top 14 all finished within a 10-second span. That's incredible to
me. It's wild. And when you look at the official results, like, he moved up 8 places. Like, he was trucking.
That's how you run a cross-country race. You know, you're picking off the guys at the end. Like, sometimes that's the motivation you need. So,
shout out to Rocky Hansen. I know that's why I dropped the plug, because Rocky Hansen's from North Carolina.
Correct.
So, we're super impressed with the freshmen. Let's kind of move now into the team aspect. And how does this kind of shape up NCAAs as we move forward? Let's talk about the men's side in regards to Nuddycombe. I feel like it was kind of expected. Like, we were expecting NAU men to do their things. I was not surprised. They won with 76 points. They were 2nd, 8th, 12th, 25th, 29th. And even their 6th and their 7th runners were in the top 50, 33rd and 43. And I'm not surprised by this at all.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, yeah, like, look at how they placed. You know, you have Nico Young and Drew Bosley both there in the top 10. And then you go 12, 25, 29 to round out your top 5 scoring squad. I mean, again, there's no question about it. I expected them to come to Nuddycombe to win. They get the win here. Now, I know we mentioned on the last podcast, last year they finished 3rd at Nuddycombe. So maybe they're like, all right, we got to get this win. Like, we can't lose again to Stanford, BYU. Those are the two teams they lost to last year. And so, I mean, they won not just by a little bit. I mean, they won dominantly.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to now see or say that anyone can challenge them right now.
Right. And I'm almost thinking, what do you improve on? Like, where do you go from here? Like, I know, obviously, at the end of the day, you're going for the national title. But, like, in between that, what do you think NAU is going to be focusing on?
I would say 4 and 5, you improve that spread there. Because if you look at Nuddycombe, they went 2, 8, 12, 25, 29. You move up that 25 and 29 closer to your 3rd guy there. There you go.
Awesome. So we're moving up the second half of that. And I think, honestly, the biggest surprise is, out of this, is the NAU teams swept. The women took down NC State, the defending champions. NAU had an insane day.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the woman really, I don't want to say I'm surprised, because we all went into this like NC State is the team. And I think NAU really showed up. And they were like, okay, we know NC State's going to be running. Caitlin Toohey's going to be on the field. Where do we stack up against the Wolfpack? And they were able to get all of their scores in the top 18, which honestly, that helped them a lot, finishing 4th, 8th, 10th, 12th, 18th. And even their 6th and 7th runners, 24th and 44th, looked great. Again, finishing in the top 50. What are your thoughts on just NAU women and how they looked at Nutty
Pot? Yeah, you know, like, I think we've talked about this before. Like, NAU, we thought the women, like, this is their year to run after, you know, for a national title. I think we probably discussed this toward the beginning of the season off the air. Mm-hmm. And at Nuttycombe, they just showed their depth. That spread from 1 through 5, 4, 8, 10, 12, 18, that's phenomenal. And, you know, for the best teams to compete at NCAAs, like, that's what you're going to need. You know, you're going to need that, you know, all your top five people packing up together and being able to run consistently up near each other at the front. Like, that is how you win a national title, and they showed that at Nuttycombe. And
yeah.
I will say, though, like, NC State still such a talented team, you know.
Right.
I think it's worth mentioning that they were missing, you know, some key players here. They're missing Amaris and Brooke Robber, and
yeah,
I believe Sam Bush was a DNF in this race. And so, you know, if that whole team is healthy, they're by far, you know, like, they're still the ones to beat, you know what I mean?
I
like
love that. Yeah.
Because you still have Caitlin, you still have Kelsey Camille, like, those are going to be your two solid leaders. And then, you know, if you get back some of those, you know, if you, by conference, if you have some of those athletes back, and then, you know, same for their, you know, Leah Stevens and Grace Hartman, their freshmen, if they're still running well as well, like, the Wolfpacker, there's no need to panic, you know? Like, I think that's the real thing.
Are you in my brain right now? Because I was just about to ask you, or not even ask, I was going to, but then I'm listening to your thoughts. I'm like, Ashley's not panicking. I'm not panicking about NC State. I still feel like they're still the heavy favorite.
I mean, they know how to win a title, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're champions for a reason, and, you know, Coach Hennis, you know, has that crew, you know, they know what to expect going forward now that we get to conference regionals, NCAAs. And again, if you have that full squad together, they're definitely still going to, like, there's no need to say they aren't going to win. Like, oh my gosh, like, there's no need to overreact.
Okay, so now with all of that being said, let's just say we're fast forwarding a month from now. NC State's lining up. They have, everyone's healthy. Everyone's good. Do you count out NAU for this team title? Or are they still contenders?
I feel like it could be close. I'm going to say it's going to be close.
Who has the upper hand?
I don't know.
Actually, I think NAU looked very strong. I'm going with the defending champs.
All right.
I feel like because they know how to perform under pressure, and like you said, they know how to win a title. Not saying NAU does not know, because obviously they've had the history in their program of winning titles.
Yeah.
Right now, I think NC State still has the upper hand. I feel that way. So I'm saying NC State.
I like that. I like that. I think it's going to be competitive. That's all I'll say. It'll be competitive.
I love it. All right. Now let's kind of switch gears and let's talk about pre-nats. And what did we learn? And I feel like we learned a lot when it comes to pre-nats. So what did you learn specifically?
Now, I'll first off and say this, you know, pre-nats, you know, most of the top teams in NCAA went to Nuttycombe, but you still had a lot of the top teams competing at pre-nats. But I think we learned a lot of things individually and team-wise.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start with my point A. I've broken this down into a couple points.
Wait, how many points? Three? Four?
Two. But they have sub-points as well.
Oh.
So let's start with point A.
Point A. Okay.
I think we have some dark horse individuals.
I can agree.
That I think have risen to the challenge that could certainly be All-Americans when it's all said and done.
Okay.
Because let's look at who won these races here on the women's and men's side. On the women's side, you have Carmen Alder. I remember this name. I competed against her in high school. There's videos out there, I'm sure. She was 203rd at NCAAs last year from BYU. She comes back. She wins pre-nats this year as BYU's top runner. 19:36 for 6K. Liv, that is almost a minute off her previous 6K PR, and which was 2023 from 2022. So 1936, that is legit at a Coors Lake Panorama Farms. Awesome. Definitely someone, especially when you're, you know, BYU's top runner like she was at pre-nats, you're going to be challenging for All-American honors. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at the men's side, you have Ben Shearer of Arkansas. He also sets a new 8K PR. Again, similar to Nuttycombe, not quite as bad, but, you know, still rainy there as well. He ran 22:55 to win pre-nats and was, if you look at what he did last year at NCAAs, he was 155th. So you have two individuals who go into pre-nats.
Yeah.
Very much improved and come away with some wins.
I love it. Okay, let's stick to individuals real quick. Mm-hmm. Amanda has a video we're about to drop because this is what I have learned from pre-nats. Jenna Hutchins is back.
Yes.
And I am so pumped for this. When I was looking at the results, y'all, Jenna Hutchins, in case you don't know, is the 5K national high school record holder and became the first girl and the only girl so far in high school history to break 16 minutes for 5K. Here in this amazing clip that we have, she went 15:58 at the Running Lane Cross Country Championships back in 2020. So for me, I've been kind of waiting for Jenna Hutchins. I'm a huge Jenna Hutchins fan. She's kind of been underneath the radar for some time now. And this season, she's been putting races together that have been very consistent, especially in the BYU uniform. And she broke 20 minutes and finished fifth with a 19:58. So I was super pumped to see Jenna Hutchins' name finishing,
yes,
finishing in the top five and doing great things in contributing to the BYU
yes,
team.
Because if you look at what she did last year in the fall, only ran twice. She finished 26th at the Rep Cross Classic, and then she, you know, finished toward the back of the at the Cowboy Jamboree. So to see her back and healthy, and she's out here running, and not only running, but just like running well, like, you know, you saw when she was a high schooler. I think that's super encouraging for BYU, especially as, you know, they're fighting for a team title as well. Like, I think that's something super exciting. So I definitely agree there that, you know, seeing Hutchins there at the front, that's a big storyline.
Awesome. Okay, now let's go to your second.
My second point?
Your second point, because my second point ties in with your second point. So we're kind of
right there. Okay.
Yes.
My second point, point B. Both the BYU women and the Arkansas men have showed that they belong within the top, I would say, 3 to 5 teams or so contending for NCAA team titles this November.
Yeah.
Let's look at the top five for each of these teams. So for the BYU women, they go 1, 5, 7, 9, and 10 to win pre-nats by nearly 60 points. I mean, when you're putting your top five all within the top 10, that's insane. So, you know, right there, that shows they have, as we've always seen with BYU women, they have that chemistry. They have that, you know, some of that pack running together. Like, that's going to be key for them. Awesome. And then if you look at the Arkansas men, too, they went 1, 3, 5, 6, and 20. They also win by just about 60 points. And so, again, when you have, you know, that kind of spread for your top five, that's, you know, I think that's, I mean, that's elite. That's, again, how you win NCAA championships. If you have your fifth guy passing some other teams, you know, third runners or something like that, like, that's when you know you are a title contender.
Yes. It's not very often that we see a program, I mean, men and women programs together have their teams all within the top five on both sides. We're seeing that with NAU and we're seeing that with BYU. And mm-hmm. I feel like specifically on the women's side, with them going into this weekend being the fourth ranked team, it shows that they deserve to be in the mix. And they are going to be in the mix and they have proven that. And I'm excited to see what they can do with 1 month to go towards the national championships. Now, I know you just mentioned Arkansas. I'm going to be kind of on the woman's side of it. I'm a huge Peyton Noe fan, and the fact that as a freshman, like true freshman, I remember seeing her in San Diego last year, finishing third at the Champ Sports Cross Country Nationals. The week before that, she was 10th at NXN. So this is an individual that knows how to compete. She knows how to be an All-American. Just looking at the high school level, and I feel like she's had a great start to being a Razorback this year, finishing third with a 19:49, and helped lead Arkansas to a second-place team finish right behind BYU. So don't count out Arkansas. Don't count out BYU. It's this me answered a lot of questions for me.
answered a lot of questions.
Answered a lot of questions. I learned a lot from Brina.
I feel like I learned a lot this weekend.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
This was great.
Just scrolling through the results. Learned a lot.
I love it. Okay, before we let y'all go, we got to discuss what World Athletics dropped. They dropped their men's and women's athlete of the year, and this is an opportunity where we can vote. And so I'm curious to see who Ashley picked as the men athlete of the year and the woman athlete of the year. So let's start with the men first. And I know we have this amazing graphic that Ashley actually made. These are the nominees. But just looking at this list, Ashley, who would you vote as the athlete of the year here?
Well, here you go. You have some heavy hitters here. Just looking at the list, you have Niraj Chopra, Ryan Crouser, Manu Duplantis, Sufiane El-Bakaleh, Jakob Ingebrigtsen, Kelvin Kiptum, Pierce LePage, Noah Lyles, Alvaro Martin, Miltiadis Tenglo, I definitely butchered that, and Carson Warholm. Mm-hmm. I made my pick, and now I'm like kind of doubting my pick.
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, can you go
first? Okay, I'm going to go first with my pick. I picked Noah Lyles. I love...
Why?
I'm about to explain. I love Noah Lyles. I feel like this guy just had the year of his life. Three golds at Worlds. Three, Ashley. 983 in the 100. Completely dominated the 200-meter field with a 1947. He's going after Usain Bolt's record. I know he didn't hit it. I have all the faith that Noah Lyles can do it. He's been undefeated in all the 200-meter finals. All six of them in 2023. He was the runner-up in Eugene in the Diamond League final and recorded three of the four fastest times during the whole entire year in history. I'm just throwing that out there. Noah Lyles has my vote.
So you're going to vote on Twitter or whatever it is?
Yes.
Okay.
Noah Lyles. Did that persuade you?
Okay, I guess
Did that persuade you?
Again, I don't feel confident with my pick now.
Okay, who do you have?
I wrote down Jakob.
I like Jakob, though.
Because, okay, if you look at it, right, he technically set two world records. I mean, they were at off distances that are never competed, really. I believe it was the...
Hey, a world record?
2 mile and the 2K?
It's a world record.
And he set the third fastest, I believe, 1500 of all time at Prefontaine.
Yes.
I mean, he did lose the 1500 at Worlds, but that was, like, his only loss of the year. So I feel like that was dominant. However, I will make... I also have another case for Kelvin Kiptum.
Okay.
You know, he set the world record in the Chicago Marathon. We've never seen, you know, in standard legal marathon conditions, anyone go under 2:01. He runs 2:05:35. Incredible. And then he also won the London Marathon, too, earlier this year in one of the, you know, top five, like, fastest time ever.
Yeah.
And that was in the rain. So I feel like maybe some of that history behind it could maybe put Kelvin Kiptum as the winner as well. There are a lot of good nominees.
I'm also looking at this again.
Mondo. Ryan Crouser.
What he did at Worlds. Just unbelievable.
The blood clot.
Like.
I can tell you something. I ain't throwing if I have a blood clot. So.
Neither would I. I would be too nervous to do more damage.
But lots of good nominees.
I love the nominations for the men's set. Okay. So your final answer is.
I'll say Jakob.
Wow, that sounded so confident. I guess I'll go Jakob.
It's a tough one.
It is a tough one. All right, well, let's talk about the ladies' side.
I have a lot to talk about with this one.
Okay, Amanda, would you mind throwing up the graphic? Actually, who do we have nominated here?
Okay, we have Tengiz Assefa, Famke Bol, Sharika Jackson, Faith Kipyegon, Haruka Kataguchi, Yaroslava Mahuchik, Maria Perez, Gudaf Sagai, Sha'Carri Richardson, Yolimar Rojas, and Winfred Yavi. Can I say one thing?
Can we acknowledge the elephant in the room? Why is Hassan's name not on this?
Yeah.
Is that the elephant in the room
for
you?
That's the elephant in the room. Where is Hassan?
Where is Hassan?
It made me a little sad. It made me sad. Like, come on. Like, look at what she did this year. She wins the London Marathon in her debut marathon. She had to stop and walk at points and still won. Then she goes to Budapest. She triples. She ran a marathon that has the speed to go medal in the 1500 at Worlds. Runs the 5K and the 10K. And then 6 weeks later, she runs the second fastest marathon ever to win Chicago. She's 2 for 2 for marathons this year, her only marathons. It would have been the fastest marathon ever if not for Assefa at Berlin. What does she have to do? What else does she have to do?
What else does Hassan have to do? Like, I was kind of mind blown to not see her name on there. What she has done, and no discredit to anybody else on the list, because
no,
I feel
agree.
Like they
just,
all...
Just add her onto the
add
list.
Add her on, add her. You know?
Yeah.
Put her on it. And I feel like everyone has acknowledged that as
it's
well.
It's been on the, you know me, I'm always scrolling
yes,
through
you're,
the socials.
You're in the loop.
I'm in the loop. It's a thing.
Yeah.
People are like, what's up?
Goodness gracious.
Anyways,
okay.
We addressed the elephant in the room.
Thank you.
We shared our opinions.
Okay. So with all of that being said, based off the nominations that we have, who is your pick? I feel like we're very in sync with this one.
I believe we picked the same person.
Yes.
I
drum roll! Who did we pick?
Yay! I mean, it's hard to deny what she's done.
Like, absolutely.
1500 meter world record. She had the 5K world record before Sagai broke it at Prefontaine.
Yep.
She won both events at Worlds. Her only loss for the entire year, I believe, came at the World Road Running Championships. Just dominant all season long in like in a very historic way. You know, when she set those world records, they came within like the same week, which is insane. And, you know, I think just we haven't seen anything like that, at least on the women's distance side, like something that dominant and that fast in a long time. And so I definitely, Faith gets my vote.
Ashley pretty much summed it up why I'm voting for Faith. Just absolutely remarkable. You're technically, as you mentioned, would have gotten 3 world records, which absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
Yeah, she's the GOAT. She's the GOAT.
She is the GOAT.
I think on every little thing I ever tweeted or anything of her, there's always a GOAT emoji.
GOAT emoji. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so. All right. Well, that does it for this episode on the Flow Track Podcast. This is episode 641, which is remarkable to think how many episodes. We would not be here if it wasn't for y'all. So thank you so much for tuning in. Please rate us on Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate that. Subscribe to YouTube. Thank y'all. And also stay tuned for this weekend. Going to drop this little plug. The Gulf South and the GLIAC Cross Country Championships are going on this weekend. But Ashley and I will be here next week. Got some great things up our sleeves. So we'll see you guys very soon and have a great rest of your week.